Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are. It is 11 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the weekend, almost anyway. It's a beautiful Friday as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Tom Gimbel. You know, we know all about the Gen Xers, right? Gen Y, Gen whatever. But this is the first full Gen Z graduating class from college, graduating from college this May. So what do we expect from them, or what are they expecting from us when it comes time to find a job? We'll talk to Gimbel about that a little bit later. Right now, Andrea Haines is in the studio. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation and so much more.
Yeah.
And joins us, Steve, on Fridays. How are you?
Good. How are
okay,
you?
Okay. I want to jump right in. I'm so excited about this Meijer story that you guys are running, Meijer Foods. Now, this is done elsewhere, right? I think there's some stores have been trying this already, but they're starting with an app this summer where you can, you know, you're pushing your cart down and you find the frozen vegetable medley, and you can just scan it with the app on your phone, and that keeps track, and you pay for it as you go, right? You never have to check out at the checkout counter.
Yeah, it's a bit of a twist on the self-checkout, where instead of getting up to the front with all your items, which I find difficult in a bigger store like a Meijer or a Target, where you might have 50 or 100 items, right? Versus one or two. So this allows you to scan as you go, and then when you get to the checkout, you still do one final scan, but then you just exit. You don't have to scan every item at that point.
Oh, so when you get to the checkout, they scan what your phone has kept track of.
There is a final scan before you just run out the door. Uh-huh. But basically, you've done all the work as you go, one by one.
And this is the wave of the future?
It kind of sounds like it. You know, it's kind of a way to like expedite that process. And I was sort of tickled by one of the quotes at the end, which was like, you know, some retailers feel like, well, it kind of removes the personal touch. And others say, you know, people don't always want the personal touch. They just want to get their stuff, not wait in a line, and not talk to anybody.
So my first thought was produce. Now, I go to Sunset Foods sometimes, and at Sunset, they weigh the produce in the produce section, and that sounds like what they would do here too.
Yep, right? There'd be a similar system, and you'd get a barcode still, so you'd still be able to scan it.
And then scan the barcode and as you go. So then the next question, not that it would ever occur to me, because theft really is never on my mind, but
of course not.
Seems like this is the sort of thing where you might get away with an extra can of lima beans once in a while.
Yeah, we are as honest as the day is long, but we'll see. You know, they're going to have to account for things like that, and
there
it'll be interesting
to see
how far they can push the bounds of, you know, letting people work on their own.
So they've been doing it in Michigan. They've had about 12,000 people with the app in Michigan.
That's true. Yeah, Meijer is big in Michigan, so they're starting there. But they are also moving into the Chicago area with this system, and it should be all around here by the end of the summer.
And I had one other question. I forgot what it was now. But it's worked in Michigan. They're happy there. I know what it is. So if I'm a cashier, should I be worried?
You know, probably. Like they say, the job cuts are not the number one goal here.
Do they ever say that they're the number one goal?
You know, they don't. Right. There's a Meijer I frequently go to in Michigan City, Indiana, when I'm over Michigan way. And I will say they do still have a need cashiers. I mean, there's still always people that don't want to do this. You know, there are going to be people that don't want to use an app, right? They might be elderly people. They might just not want to be bothered with it. If you have kids with you, it might be too much to do to, you know, I think there are always going to be people that need checkout.
But not as many.
Probably not as many, maybe doing the actual checkout. But you need workers on the floor. So, you know.
All right. Tell me about Neil Salas Griffin, because this is not a name I know.
Yeah. So Neil is, you know, familiar to many people in the startup community. He was an early tenant in 1871 working on the Starter League. He's been a coding proponent and teacher and founder. But he's about to become a lot more well-known in Chicago because he is announcing tomorrow that he plans to run for mayor.
And what's he got going for him?
So Neil's an entrepreneur, as I mentioned. He's also just one of those great personalities. You know, I mean, people really like him. He grew up in Kenwood, and he, you know, sort of deeply understands parts of the city that he feels aren't getting enough attention. He's concerned about things like campaign finance, so he's got some ideas. He does not have experience in governing, so that will obviously be an issue around his candidacy that he'll have to try to win people over.
I know that Chris Kennedy talked about during his campaign for governor about the shrinking Chicago. And that's one of the things that Salas Griffin is bringing up as well.
Yep, he's kind of hitting hard on that. You know, he's African-American, and as we've seen, numbers lately are that African-Americans are leaving Chicago. So he's definitely kind of homing in on that issue of saying, you know, people are leaving because things aren't right. So let's bring him back.
Does the fact that he comes from the world of tech, I would imagine that's a fresh perspective and might change the race up a little bit?
It is. You know, I think that community, you know, as we talk about it every week, right, there's a strong community there. I think he'll have a lot of support in that community. We're already seeing that from certain leaders. He knows J.B. Pritzker, who is, of course, running for governor.
From the tech world.
So he's got, he's pretty well connected in certain ways. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, and he's 30 years old. So this probably won't be his last crack at doing some big things in the city.
Is he an Amazon Prime member? Do you know that?
You know, I don't know that.
100 million Amazon Prime members?
One of the 100 million. We finally found out this week just how many Prime subscribers are there.
Jeff Bezos revealed that. I didn't know it was such a mystery, but the people had before it only estimated.
Yeah, they had kept that number quiet. So the estimates were fairly close. I think one was 92 million, so that wasn't too far off. But this kind of gave everyone an opportunity to see just how they stack up against others.
Interesting to me that more people subscribe to Netflix than are Amazon Prime members.
That's true. Netflix is higher at 125 million worldwide subscribers. And, you know, Amazon now with Prime gives you some of that video. So they are trying to get a piece of that as well, giving Prime members access to a lot of free video.
Last night I was on both because I was trying to figure out what to watch next. So I'm looking around Netflix, and then I'm going to Amazon Prime. I love the story because it describes a Prime as sort of a moat that keeps other retailers away, right? If you're an Amazon Prime member, then you automatically are going to sort of go there first, and that sort of keeps other vendors, online vendors, from your business.
It is. It's one of those strong hooks where, like, they really want to get you in there, and I feel like I am one of the 100 million, so as an Amazon Prime member, it creates this double thing because, yes, it gives you free shipping and, you know, some benefits, the video, things like that. But it's also kind of like, because you have to pay for it, you want to get your money's worth, right? So if you can get it on Amazon, it sort of makes you feel good because you feel like you're getting more out of your subscription. So it really kind of locks you in.
So in other words, you give them money and that makes you want to give them more money.
For the privilege of giving them more money. It's pretty brilliant.
Tomorrow is record store day, 2018 record store
Tomorrow's
day.
Tomorrow's record store
day. I know
day.
That's a big thing in Red Eye, right?
It's a big thing in Red Eye this week. So if you want to support a local business, we have a roundup of about 20 record stores that are doing fun things tomorrow for record store day. They do promotions, special releases.
How are record stores doing in the city?
You know, there's a pretty good number that are still doing okay. You know, there's been a little bit of a vinyl resurgence. So people who are hardcore into that are definitely still into record stores. And there's a pretty robust list of them that are still going strong for tomorrow.
Andrea Haynes, nice to see you again. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here's the thing, Tom Gimbel, they'll also give you a CD with the jingle on it.
1-877 Cars for Kids.
See that? A little extra bonus for them. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, is in the studio. Welcome back. How
good
are you?
Good to see you. I'm good.
Okay, we just have to say, I'm going to post a little bit later a picture because I was, Dorothy was here from The Wizard of Oz.
So funny.
And as she was walking out, I'm like, Dorothy, it's that blue check dress that
we're
she
not
wears.
In Kansas anymore, Steve.
Right. I have a blue checked matching blue shirt, and then you walk in with the same shirt.
All we need is a dog.
No, we're fine without the dog. Okay, so it's graduation season. Yep. I've got one walking in a couple of weeks, and these are the Gen Z.
Gen Z.
And what
we're
is
running out of letters.
What's Gen Z?
I believe this is the first year of Gen Z, so people that graduated, that were born after 1995? Is that when your son?
94.
94?
96. She was born in 96.
Something like that.
Yeah.
That's depressing. I graduated college in 94, which really must be depressing
for you.
If you
want to do numbers,
right?
Yeah, thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
Well, so what the statistics said, so we surveyed almost 4,000 seniors in college and asking them what they're looking for, what they want.
Right. And can I just tell you what I looked at it and what jumped out at me right away?
Mm-hmm.
They want the cash.
They want more money.
And that's what we thought millennials didn't care about.
Two years ago, it was really more work-life balance, culture, right. Philanthropy-based companies.
They want a trip to South America.
Exactly.
Don't pay them.
And now they're saying money is equal to company culture. So where I'm working is important,
right.
But not really more important than how much money I'm making.
And which is much more easy for me to believe than the idea that I'm more about the
Actually just a little bit more candor and a little bit more honesty from people, which is really an interesting fact, because I would always, you know, there's we place a lot of kids. We have a bunch of different divisions, as you know, but we place a lot of kids out of college. And you get people that say, no, it's about the opportunity. It's about the company. And then they get two or three offers, and they usually take the one that's the highest salary.
So then is this about a change in their values or belief system? Or is it, like you said, maybe just a more willingness to be candid about the
thing? I think
it's
a little bit more candid.
So then what would lead to that? Because there must be a change there somehow, too.
I think it's a lot of the social media. I think there's also just a lot of the political climate that's going around. I mean, it's interesting. And whether wherever you lean politically speaking, what's happening in D.C. is people are a lot more brash, and it starts with the president, right? And to say what you want, and this is what I'm going to get, and this is it, and I believe that's trickling down. People are a lot more direct about what they want and a lot more confident about it.
Well, there's maybe more confident because it seems like there are a lot more jobs out there, too.
Well, what that means, the market's tighter. So you're folding at 3.9, 4% unemployment. Right. And so people need someone to do the work.
Right.
And the economy's not showing any signs of slowing down. So where are you going to get it? You're either going to get somebody who's a long-term unemployed in the best economy we've had in forever, or you're going to hire somebody who's eager and ready to go. And that's what people are doing.
All right. According to your survey, 86% of grads haven't accepted a job yet, which means only 14% have.
Exactly. And that's a huge increase for us from the survey data from a year ago. And what that tells us is they're fielding offers. Why commit in January when I can see what's out there? And that's a really interesting dynamic that really illustrates how strong the economy is.
So instead of grabbing the first thing that they can, they're like, well, in my house, I'm going to move to California and see what I can find.
Well, you know what? I'm going to move to California. I can move in with mom and dad. I'm going to go travel over the summer. But I don't have to take a job in February of my senior year or January after interviewing over the Christmas break to make sure I have something. People are going to offer me a job.
Okay, so people still have to find those jobs, and they still have to find the job that meets them. What's your advice to college grads? I mean, do you do a postgraduate internship? Or
so what we saw is more students than ever before have two or more internships during college.
Okay.
So what I will say is whether you get the job now or in 6 months, if you had an internship, you are ahead of the curve.
You're ahead of the curve for the place where you had the internship or in general?
Either. Okay. Both. Because the kids that don't have internship, that is being viewed as experience. They don't have to teach you what it's like to fit in a corporate environment. You know what people are like. There's a learning curve that's a plus. And then the other thing is you are seeing more postgraduate internships because people want to try it out. They don't want to commit until they know they're going to like it.
And then people also are making more money. 90% are making what they expected.
Yeah,
or
so
more?
That's a skewed number because it's only of that 14%.
Oh, sure. Okay, right.
Right? But a big chunk are making more than what they expected to make.
And then the idea of, I was surprised by this. Let me find the number here. Yeah. It had to do with social media. 68% of respondents said they use social media in their job search.
Yeah.
That to me is shockingly low. How could you not use social media in your job?
Because I think
search?
A lot of people don't view it as a job search technique. So you have, while more and more high school seniors are getting on LinkedIn, you're not seeing that as the primary driver. So people aren't using Facebook and Instagram for job search mode.
So they, even though they're on Facebook and Instagram,
they're not using it for jobs. So they're using social media, but they're not saying, oh, you know what? My friend's dad is Steve Bertrand. I'm going to get on social media and send him a Facebook message to see if he'll meet with me to talk about a job. Right? They're not connecting the dots that way.
Then what are they doing?
They're going traditional. So they're applying to jobs that they see on the job boards. They're using recruiting firms, plug, LaSalle Network. And they're also going and using their career services department at their colleges.
So it's back to face-to-face in some ways? So are we?
Absolutely.
Are we raising our parents' generation here? They're after the
cash.
No,
I think that there tends to be a aside from LinkedIn, we're seeing just people that want to have separation on social media between personal life and career, and maybe at our ripe old ages, we're sitting there going, if we need a job, whatever we need to do. But when you're 22 and the unemployment rate's 4%, you think, you know what? I can keep it separate for now.
Let me tell you something, buddy boy. The unemployment rate was not 4% when I started.
Yeah, me neither.
And so talk to me about, in general, the job market and what you see out there.
It's
and
great.
How we're doing.
I think the job market is really, really great. We'll see some peaks and valleys coming down the road, and we'll see some industries start to downsize a little bit. But you're not going to see it in mass across the industry. We're not going to see, you know, there isn't this housing bubble that we had. It isn't the internet bubble in 2001.
It's not going to explode.
There isn't that huge bubble. So maybe it goes down by 10% and unemployment drifts up to 5.5, not huge.
We, my big thing is wages sometimes. And
You know, did you see this? So there was
shrugs.
So did you see the Amazon came out with Bezos's letter? Have you seen this and talked about this?
We talked about the 100 million followers or Amazon Prime members.
Yeah. So he wrote a letter, shareholder letter, kind of in the Warren Buffett mode, and talked about the values and the types of work ethic and things. And then it came out that the average salary at Amazon is like $26,000 a year, which, you know, they didn't separate out part time workers, factory workers, and all these different things. And you look and they say, well, that's why Amazon's worth so much, because they pay people nothing. Well, there isn't any company in the world that says, let's maximize how much we pay everybody and make as little as possible.
Amazon is worth so much because they do a damn good job.
That's exactly right. And people want to work there because the job isn't going away. And for security, you have trade-offs.
But we have talked about how when the job market tightens, its salaries will follow.
Yep.
I don't know if I've seen that. Have you seen that?
No, we haven't seen that as much. And you see that in the participation rate is not increasing. You see that average wages aren't increasing. And that's part of the technological shift. It's part of the fact that jobs can be done overseas, and there is more competitiveness in that. But what you do see is that the hourly wage may not be increasing, aside from municipalities increasing the minimum wage, which is artificial increase,
mm-hmm.
right?
Because
we're going to see salaries
mandated,
go down.
Yeah.
Right. It's mandated. What we are seeing, though, is salaries start to widen in the mid and executive level range.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, LaSalleNetwork.com.
You got it.
Nice to see you again.
Always good to see you.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12:36 on this Friday afternoon as we move closer to the weekend here in Chicago. Thanks very much for tuning in. The Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Christine Benz is on a phone line. She is the Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, so certainly a great guest to have. Also, the author of the book 30-Minute Money Solutions. Christine, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Steve, it's great to be here.
So the big event, right, is next week, the Money Smart Week in Chicago, and you're kicking things off. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we're doing an event on Monday at noon where I'll be talking about improving your financial life and improving your investments at every life stage. And then throughout the week, there will be events in and around Chicago, all throughout Illinois. There are going to be about 760 events altogether. So these are events ranging from topics like getting yourself out of debt to Social Security planning to retirement planning, which is a focus for me. But they cover a broad swath of topics. They're all free, and they're all objective. So no one's selling anything. They shouldn't be selling anything. And I think that's a huge attraction, too.
How is our IQ when it comes to personal finance? I mean, it seems like more than ever, all the answers are out there, or the strategy should be at our fingertips, but I don't know if that necessarily makes us smarter.
Well, there's a broad range in terms of investment and financial aptitude. At Morningstar, we work with a lot of investors who are really quite savvy about their investments, but some folks do have to climb a steep learning curve. It's not often taught in high schools how to manage your money, how to keep track of investments. So some people really do need to get some education, and that's what Money Smart Week is all about.
Do you think we're getting better, though, or do you think we're maybe just treading water?
Well, there's certainly a lot more free information out there and more resources that investors can take advantage of and consumers. The problem is that people just have a hard time getting engaged with the topic. So you see data saying that people spend more time planning their vacations than they do figuring out their investment portfolios. That's very true. People, by and large, just aren't that plugged into this stuff.
I was looking at some of your notes, or some of the preparation for what you're going to talk about on Monday, and how you break the people down into four categories: the young accumulators, then the multitaskers, pre-retirees, and then retirees. So let's just shuffle through that very quickly.
Sure.
Young accumulators, as you would imagine, are people in their 20s. And if you're in your 20s, the biggest thing is what? To pay off your student loan, to get your feet about you? Or what's the key that you should be doing in your 20s?
Well, you've definitely got to look at that student loan, because the average person coming out of college has $30,000 in student loan debt. But you do have to multitask. So if you've got that first job, you're earning a paycheck, it's a great idea to simultaneously, while you're putting money toward your debt, to kickstart that retirement plan, because those early dollars can be so beneficial in terms of compounding over your like 40 or 50 year time horizon.
And it doesn't have to be a lot at the start, right? It's more just the idea, A, you're doing it, but B, you're doing it. So you're getting in the habit of doing it.
Exactly, which is one reason why investing through a 401k plan where they're just deducting that money from your paycheck, whether you like it or not, is a great way to invest, to put things on autopilot is a great way to stay with it and stay disciplined about it.
Yeah, I was very lucky early on in the Tribune Company where they would do that, or even they would have a stock purchase plan where you could buy stock at a discount, and just to check that box where they took a little bit out every paycheck and that you didn't really feel it, it adds up.
It does add up. I would urge people, though, to be careful with the employer stock. Sometimes they're given incentives to steer their retirement dollars toward the employer stock. A lot of your financial wherewithal is hinging on your employer. So I think it makes sense to diversify probably into a broad portfolio versus just that one stock.
And that's why you're the expert giving advice and I'm just the guy talking. Let's go to multitaskers, because this is where you get squeezed, right? You're still maybe trying to pay off student loans, or you're trying to prepare for your retirement, but then the babies come along and you start worrying about their college education too.
That's right. So you've got a lot of people who are trying to straddle the two. Certainly paying for college is a heavy lift, and parents feel that emotional pull to try to help pay for college. The key point, though, is that in many households, there aren't enough dollars to go around. So if you have to decide, well, if I'm going to favor one account, my own retirement account or college funds for the kids, it has to go toward the retirement fund.
Okay,
because
I want you to stress that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, that's
sure.
A really hard thing to, you know, put your newborn baby in a basket and float her down the river. but that's what the advice is, right? I mean, if you have to choose, you should choose your own financial future over your child's. I think I put that too harshly, but explain that for me.
Yeah, and the point is that when your child gets close to college, he or she has more levers to take advantage of at that life stage. So while loans aren't ideal, it is a way that many folks get through college, working a little bit during college. There are different things that your child can do to help offset a lack of savings for the college fund. But when you are close to retirement, closing in on retirement, and you haven't saved enough, you don't have those same tools in your toolkit. So you've got to favor your own retirement fund.
Pre-retirees are people in their 50s and 60s who are starting to look toward it. And you talk about there the value, or that it's the time to even get rid of so-called good debt. What's good debt and why should you get rid of it at that time?
Well, historically, we've put mortgage debt in the category of good debt because for many of us, that interest was tax deductible. With the new tax laws and the higher standard deduction amounts that we'll all be able to take advantage of, many fewer of us will be itemizing on our tax returns than was the case in the past. That means that you will not get the benefit from the tax deductible interest that perhaps you did in the past. So to me, that calls for accelerating your payments on your mortgage in an effort to try to reduce that interest that you owe on a month-to-month basis.
You wrote about a catch-up contribution to a 401k, and I don't know what that is. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so you can make an extra $6,000 per year in catch-up contributions once you pass age 50, and you can make an extra $1,000 per year contribution to your IRA. So if you're someone who is hurtling toward retirement, you're in your 50s, and you fear that you haven't saved enough, it's a great way, if you can, to save additional funds for retirement.
So does that mean that I would take more out of my weekly or biweekly check to go to my 401k beyond the max now, or that I could take a chunk of money I have somewhere else and put it in my 401k?
Well, it would need to come out of your paycheck into that 401k. But the thing to know is that January 1st of the year in which you're turning 50, you can start making those catch-up contributions. And that's a great thing to do if you're an empty nester, if you've made it through those college years with your kids. Start really focusing on kickstarting or on stoking your 401k and your IRA, because those are good years to play catch-up.
Christine Benz, the Director of Personal Finance at Morningstar and author of 30-Minute Money Solutions. All right, a lot more this Monday, Christine. How do people find you and see the event?
We're going to be doing an event at Harold Washington Library at noon, so I'll be speaking at noon about financial planning throughout the life stages. The great thing about that event is that when I'm done talking, there will be financial planners there from FPA Illinois who will be on site to do one-on-one financial counseling with people. Again, objective, no sales motive here. They are there to provide help, and in my previous experience, I have found that there are some really good quality planners in attendance. So people should take advantage of this to get their questions answered.
It seems like this entire week is a great opportunity for people to take advantage and get nice advice and to get started.
Exactly. It's a great educational week, and I'm thrilled to be part of it.
Thanks for talking, Christine. I look forward to it. Hope we can do it again.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. Since the beginning of time, businesses that succeed usually depend on their invaluable people they hire. And these days, those people know their way around technology. But with more qualified people in the job market than ever, companies need help with deciding which candidates are the right fit. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos is a specialized talent strategy firm focusing on the tech industry. Co-founder Alinda Miranda Wolf formerly worked at the Chicago venture capital firm Hyde Park Angels. So it's safe to say she has a close beat on the market, and it's changing tides. Bridgeview's Toyota Park, the home for pro soccer team the Chicago Fire and Chicago Red Stars, is also seeing a few changes after the deal closed this week for new naming rights. And the name? SeatGeek Stadium. Estimates are that the name change will bring in $2.5 to $4 million per year. And SeatGeek Stadium has seen some financial troubles in the past, but this is just another example of them trying to fight back against the volatile times. Who knows? One small change could start the larger shift in the right direction. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
All right, our number of the week this week is 23,000, as in 23,000 pounds of butter. The Irish butter Kerrygold sold 23,000 pounds in the U.S. last year, $1 billion worth of butter worldwide. And because of that, Kerrygold has overtaken every other butter brand except Land O'Lakes in the U.S. at 20 years is all. A co-op in Ireland started it about 20 years ago. I've got a great article about the origin of Kerrygold butter on my Facebook page, so check that out. Also tweeted it at Steve Bertrand.
Back to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:54 here on this Friday afternoon. In the studio now is David McAlley. He is with Sales QB. And you know, I said just a few minutes ago, it's not unusual now for companies to outsource human resources or accounting, things like that. So what about management of the sales force? David, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, thanks, Steve. And it's kind of a new concept. Parallel with HR or CFO outsourcing. But it's a reasonably new concept. It's been around for a few years, and it provides additional resources to small businesses in business-to-business applications that they might not be able to otherwise source or afford.
Okay, so I, you know, and like I said off the air, jokingly, you're going to have to talk slowly with me here because I'm trying to grasp this. I'm not sure exactly what sales management is involved with, right? So say I'm selling basketballs, right? I've got a sales force out there selling basketballs. Those salesmen or saleswomen then would report to a manager, right? And that's what you're offering. You're offering to become that person.
That manager on a fractionalized basis, because most small businesses maybe don't have the resources to afford someone with a level of expertise that sales QBs typically have. But I'll go to a business at 42nd and Racine, set up shop, and show up there 4, 5, 6 hours a week and actually serve as that company's sales manager. It's a fractionalized approach to sales management. Maybe I can't afford the level of expertise I need 40 hours a week, but maybe I could afford it for 5 or 10.
When you are talking about management, are you talking about then keeping records of the sales, or are you talking about being a rah-rah guy and motivating the sales force? Tell me about that.
We start with an audit that tries to determine how a company benchmarks against the best sales practices, 30 or 35 best sales practices. So each individual company has its own needs. Some companies need to leverage technology better. Other companies need help in the hiring process, training process. And others just need help on their lead generation and keeping potential new business in the funnel. So it's based upon an audit, try to determine the needs, and then come in and provide those needs, but do it at a time commitment and at a price that is affordable.
A growing company? You're growing sort of niche, or how's it working?
Well, I've been with SalesQB since 2017. The concept has been around on a sales application based in Indianapolis since about 2015. So, yeah, we're continuing to grow, but it's a new concept, and is often the case, it takes a while for a new concept to register with.
So who are we talking to? Who do you want to talk to today? If there's someone out there who might need more information?
Someone who's a small business with generally a dozen or fewer salespeople, and who are, for whatever reason, not growing the sales the way they want. They're not happy with the go. Or maybe it's an entrepreneur who founded the company and just doesn't know and doesn't like running the sales
department.
That's
what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about some woman or some guy who just loves what they've created and they don't want to be pulled away.
And they don't have the expertise to do it. And that's what SalesQB is. And there, as I mentioned to you, there are four of us that I'm aware of that are working just here in the Chicago area.
Where do people find more information?
They can go online to or send me an email at davidm@salesqb.com or check out our webpage at salesqb/hut1.
David McAlee, thanks for coming by.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Great memory there. You did that very well.